Constitution. Pretty good day today.
Surprisingly, shit. New people, man, out of nowhere. So it's nuts.
It's good stuff. I see your advertisements all the time. Yeah. I mean, stuff, people on Facebook and stuff posting stuff out.
Always. Hey, had a good time. You know, that's like, that's why we do it, man.
Well, here we are. Scary Dad Podcast. This is episode 16.5. This will be our third meta episode, and we are here at local vintage toy shop Misfit Toys. It's in the Heights Common Market at 1802 Yale Street, Houston, 77008, and I am with the owners, Daniel and Paulina.
Hey,
welcome to the show, guys.
Hi.
What's up?
So like I said, this is a 0.5. It's a meta. So basically what happens is normally we record two episodes at a time and try to have stuff in the hopper. And then we are, because as we're growing now, we have a demand for both more content, but also trying to reach out to some local folks and do a spotlight on them. So technically the metas were supposed to be shorter. We've done two, and they've been our two longest episodes we've ever done. Nice. So we'll just see how it goes.
Be here all night.
We could be, but we are here to talk about horror. We're here to talk about toys, and I'm looking around and you've got a shop full of horror toys, so sounds like the place to be.
Oh yeah.
So we'll just start at the beginning. How did you guys get into selling vintage toys?
Let's see. I'd say 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, I was at a Trader's Village, and my girlfriend, now wife, thought it'd be a good idea to downsize my collection. I had a house in the Heights. I had three bedrooms just filled with toys. Most of it was horror. Sci-fi related stuff, and she was going to be moving in soon. And she said, you know, we need to downsize some of this stuff. So on a whim, we went out there in November. In the first weekend that we were out there selling, it was just a knockout hit. We saw what everybody else was selling, and there really wasn't a lot of horror. And whatever horror there was there, the people that were selling it just were kind of clueless about what it was, how valuable it was. And we are horror nuts. We know our stuff. So we made friends right away. Kept going out every weekend with just horror stuff. And, you know, the masses spoke. They wanted vintage Star Wars also. They Absolutely. Wanted He-Man and Ninja Turtles. So we started to really learn about the game, reselling toys, buying lots. The next summer, I made a purchase of a storage facility that was an old toy store that had closed, and it was filled to the ceiling, 20 by 10, and it had everything you can ever imagine in toys.
Wow.
And that kept us fat for about a year, but after that, we knew what we were doing, so we took that knowledge, started doing all the cons in Houston, you know. Space City, Comic Palooza, of course, eBay. But we saw that we had kind of outgrown Trader's Village, where we were set up there. You can't work there when it rains, when it's too hot, when the kids are on vacation. It's just, the demand was just growing and growing. So we walked into this place, the Heights Common Market. And I've always been known to be an impulsive guy, but boy, that was an impulsive day for me. I was in here 5 minutes, and I signed a lease 5 minutes later, and I didn't even tell my wife.
Oh, wow.
It was a big surprise.
I called her, and I said, hey, you need to get down here. I might have done something that you might not like, but we saw potential here, and in the 6 months that we've been here, we've had over 1,000 organic likes. We are partnered with this Facebook group called VHS Slaughter, where we show old horror movies here on VHS on an 8-foot screen. We do that about once every 2 weeks. We also have a lot of like movie nights where we just watch horror movies with our regular customers. we're partnered also with Warner Brothers and Paramount to get free movie passes to pretty much every movie that's coming out. Rings is coming out, so we got passes. Right, if it's a horror movie, we're all over it. But you know, superhero stuff as well. But yeah, it's been, the Heights have been very kind to us. I grew up here, went to Hamilton, graduated from Reagan, so I know this area very well, and the people here are just freaking awesome.
I've always loved the Heights. I grew up out on the west side, pretty close to where I live now, and my wife did too, but then we both moved into Montrose, and we were working in bars over there, and that's where we met. So then, you know, so we're, anytime we get a chance to come back to the Heights, you know, normally whenever we're got a day without the kids or they're off somewhere, where we're gonna go, it's let's go ahead and hit up Cedar Creek, or let's, you know, one of the places around. So very, very much love the Heights. You mentioned VHS Slaughter. For me, I've always been a horror buff. I mean, I started Scary Dad the website back in like 2012.
Wow.
Because I needed an echo chamber, and what I found for myself online is I'd see a whole bunch of what you might call like academic reviews of movies, but I never got like the down and dirty, like, is it scary? Is it, will it keep you up at night? You know, that sort of stuff. And I mean, some of them were there, but not really. A lot of them, you know, how like film files, you know, cinema people, they want to sound smart. And mm-hmm. and so I was like, man, I want to do my own thing. I want to talk about the toys and the movies and the books and the stuff from the 80s that I loved growing up. So I started the website, and then here about just like 4 months ago, I guess, I met Scott, and I swear it was like a scene from Step Brothers. We were like, just started talking about comics and artists and movies and bands, and it was like, dude, did we just become best friends? So we're like, we need to do something. So I just kind of added a podcast plug-in to the website. And nice. since we started, it's been growing. So, you know, when you do what you love, those organic likes just start coming through. But it's interesting that you mentioned the VHS. I started just recently just picking up horror movies at like Goodwill and stuff and building an old VHS collection, because a lot of them are hard to find. And I've got two small children, so, you know, I'm not going to be going and spending a whole lot of money on the movies, because I don't ever get a chance to watch them. You know, so spend $12, $15 on a DVD, I don't get to watch it for like 6 months, because, you know, I'm like, man, that's kind of a waste. But if I find it find the old classics on VHS. So that's interesting, because that's kind of a growing community, that VHS throwback thing. It's really neat. So I'm going to have to check that out. So since you started, let's go ahead and skip around here a little bit, but what's like the stuff you know, the stuff you've learned, what's something that is like surprisingly expensive that you never would have thought? That people either want to buy or that they're willing to pay for, that's just off the charts, like, bizarre.
this generation, this, I guess, crossover multi-generations right now that we're seeing, where little kids that like Transformers and adults like Transformers, that all started in the 80s, but what is surprisingly the holy grail for a lot of people is Godzilla stuff, because that's been around since the 70s. It's innocent enough that, you know, there's hardly any dialogue in those movies, that grandparents, parents, and their grandchildren, they can all kind of still sit in front of that TV and watch those grainy old Godzilla movies. They're not that violent when you compare it to what's out there now. We were at a estate sale, I think, and there was this Godzilla inflatable 8-foot Godzilla, and I think we paid $30 for it. Never been taken out of the box, and it's lowest price we see it for sale is $500.
Wow.
And the thing is, it's got a wow factor like you've never seen. I know one customer that bought one previous to coming to our shop, inflated it for his kid's birthday party, and it went right back into the closet until the next year. But an 8-foot tall inflatable Godzilla is pretty impressive. But
for sure,
any of that stuff that was available in the 70s, the 70s is definitely the era where the toys are the most expensive, the hardest to find, and it's pretty rare you see any of them come through in good condition because they're just so old. But once in a while you get lucky and you're like, wow, look at that. That's, you know, there's of course 1977 Blue Snaggletooth from Star Wars. Those go anywhere up to $300-$400 graded. We find them sometimes in garage sales for $1 and it's like, holy cow, look what we got. Mm-hmm. But yeah, horror stuff, there is nothing, not Star Wars, not Ninja Turtles, not He-Man. If it's like vintage horror Dracula stuff, I was looking today at a tin Dracula coffin. The coffin actually opens and he comes out of it, $500. It was made in the 70s. So anything like that is highly, highly sought after.
Awesome. You mentioned Godzilla. It's, and I know you hear this all the time, but one of the first toys I ever remember having was that Shogun Godzilla with the hand that popped off.
Oh yeah.
That was another thing, you know, Scott and I had in common. We started talking and, you know, he's like, man, I had that. I was like, I totally had that. Like, let me ask you this though, because I've been looking for one, and it's one of those things that I'm curious if it, there was a, I had it when I was a kid. It was a character called the Crusher, and he was green. And basically what he was he was inflatable, green, like soft-bodied monster. And he had a orange belt that acted like a deflate. And you'd squeeze him down, and you'd squeeze all the air out of him. And then, like, you could roll him into a ball, and then he would reinflate. And I have looked online, and I have seen, like, in a really, really, like, old, from, like, 2008, like, no longer functional forum, some people very, very quietly mentioning that they think they might remember that. But it seems bizarre that it's something that is... you've never seen it before.
I have never heard of that, let alone seen it. There was a toy that I had that sounds familiar to that, but it was filled with, like, a gel. So I don't think that might have been it. It was really gross stuff. It was stunk if you busted him open.
Oh, really?
But yeah, that was from like 1979 that I had that toy. So
yeah, that would have been same thing with him, but he was full of air.
Wow.
And yeah, it's, if you ever see one, I'm looking for it. That's kind of a grail, because he apparently doesn't exist. Have you heard of the Mandela effect?
Like Nelson Mandela?
Like Nelson Mandela.
No.
It's this weird conspiracy theory that's floating around the internet right now that assumes that we went through some sort of dimensional shift, because there are millions of people who remember that Nelson Mandela died in jail, but he didn't die in jail. There's millions of people who remember the Berenstain Bears being spelled STEIN instead of STAIN. And there's like, there's all these people that remember things that apparently don't exist. And there's lots of people have the exact same memory of something. And I've been encountering it quite a bit recently with like collectibles and toys of, this thing simply does not exist. Like, no, I had it. I played with it a lot.
I believe you, man.
It's, hey, man, I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying that I had that guy.
Wow, I am going to hunt that one down for you then.
Try to find him, yeah. So other than that, I guess you said Transformers are about the most popular now? That's what...
Transformers are the most popular toy in our shop because they're a cross-generational toy.
Mm-hmm. You can buy them at Target, but they're just not as good.
Correct,
so people want the old good ones.
They started in the 70s. The Japanese kids, they got a different version that we did. Their Transformers... weren't sentient. People actually drove the Transformers, but once
kinda
they
like
got
Voltron,
over
here, sort of
like Voltron. So when they got here, they didn't want the cartoons to reflect that. So they all became, they all had their own personalities, their own voices. It gave the cartoons so much more depth that I remember the first episode, and it literally changed my life as a little kid. There was just nothing. Voltron was great. I was right before that, but it was very limited. Voltron would basically slash a road beast at the end of the episode, and there was not a lot going on there. This had such a tremendous story of robots that were looking for a new home. They land on Earth. They work with the humans. They try to protect us. They're fighting the Decepticons. And with all the popularity, we actually got our first movie. It was Transformers the movie, which mm-hmm. we went to go see over and over.
You're talking about the animated one.
Correct. Oh, yeah. Not the Michael Bay
style. No.
But that just shows you how, even though nothing happened for a long time for Transformers, out of nowhere, you know, Michael Bay makes this like knock it out of the park movie that's made billions of dollars already. And the anticipation of part 5, which is coming out this summer, I believe it's this summer, it revamps the toy industry. They just start cranking toys out, but at the same time, the kids want the toys in the store, but mom and dad are like, well, if you like these, you're gonna love the old stuff. Yeah. And there is probably the nicest thing about this job is that there is a real emotional connection people have with toys, and especially Transformers. People will stand there in front of those cases and they'll just be like transfixed and just look at them. Sometimes they'll be like, can I touch them? Sure, man, no problem.
I feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, for me, mine was He-Man. I mean, whenever I was a kid, that was, I still remember that first time I heard, you know, I saw that commercial, and it was the first one where it's like Castle Grayskull, He-Man, Skeletor, and Beast-Man, those three. And I just remember being like, and I remember it was Saturday morning, I was watching cartoons, my parents were still asleep, and I went and woke them up and was like, this is just gonna be, I'm like, I gotta have He-Man.
Oh yeah.
And that Christmas I got them all, so it was good stuff. So
yeah, being an American kid in 1983, I think, unless your parents didn't love you, you got a Castle Grayskull, you got the Battle Cat, you got the Panther, and it was a small run of figures, but they made so much money. They're being mass produced in Mexico, so we got them fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, literally that cartoon would come on, 7 minutes into it, you'd see a commercial for a brand new He-Man toy. And later that day, you could find it in the store. It was the availability was that fast. There was no waiting for the weekend. It was like, we gotta go get that Spikor, the new Skeletor with the battle armor, Skeletor with the claws. It didn't matter. We had to have it.
It was for me. Well, I mean, obviously all of them, but I distinctly remember the two that I absolutely had to have from seeing the commercial, and that was Webstor and Clawful. Those two, it was like, I don't care what happens, I gotta find a way to get these guys. I gotta get good grades at school. I gotta be nice to mom. The whole works.
I think the one that definitely did it for me was the Dragon Walker. It was one of the first toy I ever saw that actually had batteries, that, you know, it walked and
did what it was supposed to do.
It was so cool because they show like going over a little creek of water, so we would dig a little trench, pour water down there. Of course it never actually walked across it, but you know, that's Hollywood. Yeah, that was the one for me. That was like, oh my god.
Oh yeah, I had so many of them. And I might still, I mean, go out to my mom's house, there's still boxes of stuff out there, but it's not, I mean, I played with my stuff. I mean, I probably had, I'm going to say very conservative, I probably had 4 different He-Man, like the original He-Man, that I just destroyed.
Like, oh yeah.
Just played with them until their arms were too loose and he couldn't hold his weapons anymore and be like, Mom, need another He-Man. So, you know, I played with mine. It wasn't until I was older and then you realize things had collector value and stuff, and that's something that I go back and forth with, because I'm very much a purist, so I want the best condition piece that I can find. But usually, when I buy something, I have no intention of ever selling it. So I go back and forth with like what's relative value versus actual market value versus do I wait till that movie comes out and the hype dies down before I buy that again because it's inflated and I don't ride the markets, you know. Same thing with comics, I don't do that either. I just buy what I like and hold on to it. And I get frustrated whenever the markets get artificially spiked by, you know, prospectors or investors or whatever. But like looking here, you kind of obviously you have a constant influx of stuff. So
oh, yeah.
How are your prices? I mean, are they pretty steady, or I mean, do they drive by trends? Like, kind of, what's your price strategy, so to speak?
When we were at the Traders Village market, we priced accordingly. You know, it was an outdoor market. Our rent and our overhead was like next to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was definitely one of the reasons we had so much repeat customer visibility there, where just every weekend, same people would come to us. And that definitely, on that strength, we opened the shop. But we are in the Heights. It is tremendously more expensive to have a brick and mortar store. And we don't have investors or partners, so it's just us. So we price our stuff at above retail for vintage. But well behind you, every single Star Wars figure there is about $5.
Mm.
And, you know, you can find those kind of prices on eBay. I don't check and see at all what my competitors are charging. I always tell people, I don't know what they paid for it. I know what I paid for mine. And we're a lot more generous when people walk in with a collection. Somebody has a bunch of He-Mans. We sell them for $5 to $10. We'll try to come somewhere between 25 and 50% of the value. If it's complete, good condition.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for example, if it was the He-Man, the Battle Cat, and all their gear, we'd probably pay $25 for that and sell it for $50. So it's some stuff that's hot, like He-Man's hot right now. Transformers are hot. We'll pay definitely a much better price. But like I said, it's the Heights, so people that shop here, they understand that. They really do. Nobody, not once, has ever complained to me directly saying, hey man, your prices are too high. It's kind of like anything else, you know, location dictates that, the pricing.
Well, I've shopped in your store quite a bit. Not obviously before we knew each other, but I've been here with my wife and I brought my kids a couple times, and you know, your prices are very, I'm always surprised, like, man, this, you know, you're competitive or even less than on some of the stuff. I mean, sometimes you go to a place and they'll have like buckets and it's like everything in here is $10 and you're like, it's kind of,
yeah,
but these are broken. So all those He-Man over there in pretty decent condition. And
And that's another thing we do too. Like, there's 200 He-Man over there. They're all the same price.
Mm.
There is, that kind of works with Star Wars, I guess, where some Star Wars figures are definitely worth more money if they're older, but it gives you an opportunity as a collector. You pay $10 for Skeletor just like you would for Ram Man, which is pretty much a useless figure, you know, that kind of thing. So
he wasn't very fun.
No.
Whenever he was new.
You open him up and you're like, are you kidding me? So what? You just push him down and that was it.
Yeah, talking about He-Man, it's like funny how like the first 2 to 3 generations, they were very creative with their names, and then they just kind of got lazy. They're like,
oh yeah,
we're going to give this guy a fist. We'll call him Fisto. We're going to give this guy a, you know, karate chop. We'll call him Ninjor. You know, it's like, we're not even going to try anymore. Like,
we are constantly making fun of the He-Man and Ninja Turtle names. It's just like, imagine being a fly on that wall. It's like, this guy's got a karate chop, yo. Ninjutsu. Or, this guy can ram things. Like, Ram Man. It's like, wow.
Yeah, we're not paying you to think. We're just paying you to write it down and send it out.
So I think they probably put some names in a hat and they just drew one on. Like, this is Buzz Off, and he looks like a bee.
So do you guys get a whole lot of horror stuff through, or is that a common theme? I have found, because I've always been into horror, but I found horror-related merchandise is relatively hard to find. I mean, with comics and you know, just about anything else. And it's not as if they're very, they're very expensive market wise. They're just hard to find. So, you know, it's like, call it like a house of mystery, you know, like just the pulp comics from the 70s. If you find them, they're generally $1, $2, $3. You know, they're not like super over the top valuable on a price guide sort of scale, but damn, they're hard to find. People hold on to them. So, I don't know, what do you see stuff coming through a lot, or
you want to take this?
Yeah, sure. Paulina chiming in. I would say that as far as for horror, the demand is greater than what we can supply.
Really?
For quality. It's really hard for us to find people who are willing to part with Universal Monster stuff, with, you know, some of the more classic, you know, a Freddy collection or a Jason collection. People generally who collect that don't really let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it's pretty hard, and when we have it, we sell it really fast.
Yeah, I started off, I think the first technical, you know, horror movie that I saw, technically first movie that I ever saw, was The Exorcist in the theater, and it was like 1978, and there was a theater by my house that played old movies. I think the movie came out at 75, and they would show old Bruce Lee movies and blaxploitation movies, and my parents would take me. I was a little kid, and just like got blown away by that movie. There is there's just like, you, if you're a horror fan, it starts early.
Mm-hmm.
There is a deep, deep connection that I have with horror movies, horror memorabilia. Whenever I hold a toy, like a Freddy figure, a Jason figure, I remember 1983, I remember Friday the 13th, I remember what I felt, that fear, that genuine, like, this movie evoked a spiritual change in me. This is like, I've wanted this my whole life and I didn't even know it. So imagine that 2 decades go by, you know, from when these movies came out, and here's the early 90s. Todd McFarlane, the guy who created Spawn, Spawn.com, starts to make a line of toys called Movie Maniacs. And I was like at my prime, I'm in like my 20s, and these were like accurate toys. They looked exactly like the characters from the movie, except now they're in an 8-inch size, and you can collect them all for $8.99. I went nuts. That series had a long run. It was seven. There were 7 series altogether. But he also did other stuff that was horror related. But that was there. That he, you know, it was like the Beatles. You know, they inspired, those toys inspired NECA. They inspired Mezco and Soda Toys and all these other companies that grew out of that. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, holding on to that stuff, you treasure it, and that's why it's very hard. My wife and I typically leave Houston. We've driven to Oklahoma, Louisiana, the Valley to pick up horror movie collections, and it's only when somebody is like on hard times, where they're willing to part for it. And we'll sit there and talk to these people, and man, it's like
they don't want to give it up.
They don't want to give it up, but they know as much as you do, and you almost like become instant friends, and they feel good that it's going to a good home.
Mm-hmm.
People will ask us sometimes, you know, what's going to happen to our toys, our collection. I was like, the only people who are going to buy these are people who are going to love them. And there's stuff in my collection I've had since I was a teenager that's like horror movie related, and statues, posters, things like that I will never part with, even though I have a shop. And I see that when I go to people's homes and I see their collections. For horror, they'll part with 10% of it max. You know, and maybe it's just time, babies come along, you know, maybe we need to move, can't bring that much stuff with you, you know, that kind of stuff. There's always a reason, but I have seen people part with 1,000 Transformers, 1,000 Star Wars figures, like nothing. But when they part with horror movie figures, it hurts. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's very hard to find anybody with quantity. Usually it's just a few pieces. We have a good selection. I think we have one of the bigger selections in Houston, for that stuff, because I love it. If it comes through the door,
I was gonna say it must be hard. You must have to be like, well, I've already got three. I can go ahead and sell one.
Yeah, we'll take another Freddy anytime. In fact, today a gentleman came in, just moved here from Virginia. He bought a Nightmare on Elm Street action figure, and it just blew his mind that they even made those. I'm like, they don't have toys in Virginia? And he's like, guess not. But he loved the shop, and he said he'll be back for more horror stuff. So it's always good to meet a horror fan.
That's awesome. Yeah, you mentioned Mezco. So there's a stylized Jason Mezco figure that I got. You're probably familiar with it. It's the one where he's like real hunchbacked, and he has the three different weapons, and then one version of him had severed heads. Well, it's part four, so he's got the gash on his head. Mm-hmm. And so my little girl at the time, I guess she was like maybe three, so he's sitting up on a shelf in my office, and something happened and he fell off the shelf. Well, he's way up here. He falls off the shelf, and she goes and picks him up, and she notices he's got this cut on his head, and she just flips out. She's like, your guy got hurt, Daddy. And she forced me to go put a Band-Aid on his head. So I have this Jason Voorhees collectible with a, like, frozen Band-Aid wrapped around his head for, like, you know, long enough to take a picture. Wow. And then she left the room, and I'm like...
That's adorable.
But it was really cute. I didn't want to pull off his mask because I didn't want her to be scared of him because she's being sympathetic. But
that's an awesome toy. We've had many times through the years, and they are hard moments to find. Count yourself lucky to have one.
You know, every now and then when you look around, because like I said, I buy stuff and I keep it. So every now and then you look around and you're like, okay, well, things are getting a little cluttered. I need to either rotate or I need to move some stuff out. That's definitely one of the ones that are not on the list.
Oh yeah,
like that one. Yeah. That one's not going to go in a box for any period of time. He's just going to be where he's at.
Yeah, that's how we feel about our collection. We collect a lot of things. You know, he's got some Transformers, and I collect lunch boxes. But yeah, mostly our home is top to bottom horror. Every room in the kitchen, including the bath. Every room in the house. Including the kitchen, the bathroom. I mean, everything is horror themed. Posters on every space of the wall.
See, it's funny that you both are like that. I've had my wife and I just we'll have been married for 9 years, but we are together for 13 as of a few days ago. And she's not horror. It scares her. Like it's supposed to, I guess, but you know, she's like, So she just wouldn't have it. And then I got her to watch The Walking Dead with me.
Oh yeah.
All right.
And strangely enough, it's funny because she won't watch other stuff, but she'll watch that. And I'm like, babe, that really kind of pushes the limits on like gore and actual dread and fear. That's pretty much at the top end of the scale, so pretty much anything else you should be able to handle, because especially anything from the 80s, it's all rubber and latex and fake. There's no CGI, like, you know, not to, you know, this is my bread and butter, but you should be able to handle it. If you can handle the zombie stuff, you should be able to. Nope. But I'm also a real big Halloween haunter and a big, you know, so I haunt my house. And you know, my daughter, I've got two little ones, and my older one has always just been intrigued. So you gotta be careful how you let that out, because you don't want to traumatize them too young, but she's very curious. So she'll see the cover of a horror movie and be like, what's the story behind that one, Dad? I'm like, well, he's a bad guy. Oh, you can watch it when you're older. She's like when I'm seven? I'm like, no, 17? You know? So I've got two little minions that just follow me around, and they put on the scary masks, and they, you know, they're completely not nonplussed by the horror factor. They're like, if Dad thinks it's cool, it's cool. Yeah. But they're just too little. So my wife just rolls her eyes and it's like, you brought me along on this crazy, you know. But now at least, it used to be like because I build stuff for Halloween. Like, I build yard haunts and decorations and stuff. And I used to start, you know, there's a certain point, like, probably July 5th or 6th, when the sun hits that kind of spot where it turns and it starts to feel like fall.
Oh, wow.
I'll be like, okay, well, now I need to, like, supply up. I need to go buy plywood and latex and get ready to go for the season. And before, she's like, you can't do that. It's July. I'm like, I know. I'm running out of time.
Yeah, but you only have 4 months.
You know, yeah. I mean, I gotta go. I gotta work. You know, I gotta do this. And now she's on board. She'll come in and she'll be like, hey, do you think you can build that? I'm like, I think so. She's like, you need to get on it. That's one of your Halloween projects. I'm like, wow. Cool. It's only May.
That's awesome.
It's cool. So, it's been a dream. She still won't watch scary movies with me, so.
Yeah.
But we still got time. So, what are some of the lost gems? Some of the stuff that you're like, oh my God, I forgot about that. Like, the other day I was playing around online and I saw, like, it was a YouTube video, but somebody had, like, a mashup of some old cartoon themes. And one of them was the Inhumanoids.
Oh.
And I remember when those were new, how scary they were. Like, I mean, and they were aimed at little kids. It wasn't mm-hmm. like it was a grown-up thing. But they were like demons who lived in hell. So, sort of, I guess. I don't remember the story. But they were huge and they were expensive. And I remember wanting that guy that used the his rib cage as a prison. But do those things come through here? Do you see that kind of stuff?
No,
or is that another one of those that people hold on to?
Those were very expensive when they came out, so not a lot of kids got them, and they were so creepy, not a lot of kids got them as well. The Holy Grail for horror of all time is a 1977 2-foot-tall alien. That the one you talk about around the campfire, like, you ever have one, you know your stuff.
Big Chap.
They call him Big Chap. What happened is, it was just one big hunk of black plastic, and it had the see-through top piece. You could see the brain of the alien. They took him to Toys R Us, and people were just terrified. You can imagine, it was the 70s, so, you know, whatever TV shows were available at the time, there wasn't anything that hard. You know, Alien took this country by surprise. It mm-hmm. was a horror film that really laid the groundwork for all horror films. It's like no real special effects, just a really good cast of characters and an introduction of the first, like, unstoppable, you know, man versus a supernatural. It didn't talk, so that made it even scarier. And it ate you, and it grew a baby inside you and rip out of your chest. And so this toy was at the store, and they were banned almost immediately. They're like, take them off the shelf. They clearanced them out at $3.
Oh, wow.
If you ever see one out of the package, they can run a few $100, but in the package, they go as high as $700.
So he was 3 feet tall?
Two feet tall.
He was like,
yeah,
it was
wow.
Huge. NECA has recently reissued one that was 3 feet tall. The thing is massive, and that one's $600-$700 on the secondary market. But that just shows you, it's like horror movie, low numbers in production, unlike He-Man, where they made like 10 million of them. Mm-hmm. They only made maybe a few hundred thousand of them, and they didn't do well. They scared the crap out of everybody. So I have been looking for one in the box for 20 years.
Have you seen, like, availability, like, can you buy it, like, on eBay, and it's just too much to pay for? Or
you can buy it on eBay all day, but I would never ever order something that precious that could get damaged, you know, mm-hmm. in the mail. And, you know, for a serious collector, you need to hold that thing in
your absolutely hands. Like, I'm just curious about their availability, because like I said, with that crusher thing, one of these days one's going to emerge and it's going to be like $1,000 because mm-hmm. or since nobody seems to have remembered it, it'll be like 35 cents at Goodwill, and I'm going to yoink it up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, put them in a place of honor up in my room there. But,
oh, yeah.
The alien, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So I've seen those Godzillas for a couple hundred dollars.
Shogun?
The Shogun Godzilla.
Yeah, we've had them in here. They sell for about $200 to $250. Price goes up on the quality. That toy had a lot of parts.
Mm-hmm.
A removable tail, a tongue that spit out of his mouth back and forth, and it had a lever in the back of his head, and it had two fists that shot out, and you know, we're talking about metal springs that were probably exposed to a lot of humidity over the years, so it's hard to find one that's in good condition. I'm sure there's probably one or two available. You could probably walk into a shop in Houston and see one, but you really see them come out during convention season.
It's funny because, you know, I'm sure you hear it all day. Like, oh, I had this, or I had that, or I had those, which, of course, is the nostalgia market. That's how that works. You know, people either had it and want it again, or they never had it and they still want it.
Yeah.
But very few people are like, I don't have a clue what that is, so give it to me for a couple hundred dollars.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember my Godzilla, the first thing out of the box, he had that little red lever that you pulled on it and just spit his tongue out.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the box, went like that, or I had the lever and snapped it right off.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, I was like 3-4 years old when I got it, but I remember that it snapped. I mean, obviously I'm older than that because I can remember having done it, probably 4, 4 and a half, almost 5. Snapped that thing off, and so forever, he had like a little nub of that lever sticking out so I could pull it down and stick his tongue out. And then I see he's like, oh, he's like super valuable. I should have kept mine. I'm like, well, it wouldn't have mattered. She was damaged right out of the box. It would have just been cool to sit on the shelf, you know. I came up in a time of garage sales. Moms just got a hair up their ass to just sell your shit.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad tells me the most tragic story of how, like, he didn't collect comics, but he liked comics, but he liked to go back and reread them. So he had, you know, the first Spider-Man and the first Fantastic Four and, you know, the first issues, because he liked runs. So he had, like, Amazing Fantasy, and then he had Spider-Man, and he had them, like, straight down. And he just had them in a drawer. He'd read them, and he'd put them away. He took care of them because he liked to revisit the stories, and he had them all in a drawer. When he went off to college, his mom went and cleaned out that room and, like, dumped all his crap. He came back, like, in his first break and was like, where's all my stuff? And she's like, oh, you don't need that. This kid's stuff. And so whenever I was young and started getting into comics, he's like, I don't even want to tell you, but... I'm like, dude, that's tragic. It's like, your mom had no idea. But if moms didn't throw away all the old stuff, the ones that still are around wouldn't be worth what they are. So
Exactly.
You kind of have to temper that.
Every day somebody comes in with a similar story.
It's
yard sales. They sold their He-Man for a quarter, you know, their Transformers for 50 cents, you know.
I'm really lucky in that I can say that most of mine broke from playing with them.
Well, that's good.
Like, yeah. I played with them, they broke, they got to a point where they were no longer play withable, and then I ended up either burning them or blowing them up with, you know, they went out in a blaze of glory, you know, like, but they ended up just dust. They're no longer, they weren't, like, repairable. So that happened to most of mine. So I am fortunate in that, you know. My early toys, like my Godzilla and stuff, you know, mom garage sold it, but then I've got a Darth Vader and a Stormtrooper that I got at a garage sale for like $4. Somebody didn't know. I'm like, are you seriously selling that for $4? He's like, yeah, just take it. Here you go.
They don't want it. Yeah.
It's a smaller world now as far as collecting goes. So I'd say from just 5 years ago when Paulina and I would hit garage sales and we'd find stuff like that, people know now.
eBay, I mean, you know. And like you were saying how you get stuff on eBay, like I'll put searches. I want this or I want that or I want this other thing. And like I just yesterday or the day before I get a little alert. It's Superman comic, but it's Superman Annual 11, and it was written by Alan Moore. You're familiar with the book. They actually made an episode of the Justice League cartoon but it's basically Mongol traps Superman with this flower that puts you in a dream state. So Superman wakes up and he's living on Krypton. He's married to Lois Lane. He has a son. His parents are still alive. It's everything you ever wanted. And then, but it's a dream world. It's not real. So then Batman and Wonder Woman come to the Fortress of Solitude and discover what's been going on. They're fighting Mongol while he's asleep. And as the things are rocking around, Krypton starts falling apart. And it's like a very, very emotional story. And it's super, super cool. And the book's like $100. It's very hard to find. Wow. And when you find it in good condition, it's easily $100. And, yeah, ding, ding. It's like annual 11, $24.95. It's like, like, sight unseen. Get back to me. If it sucks, I'll turn it around and sell it again.
Nice.
But, there's some really good stuff. You just have to keep your eye out. But, man, there's a lot of stuff out there. Like, right now, I'm starting to pick up the old Superpowers. You see those come through very often?
Oh, yeah. We just picked up 5 this week, and somebody sold us a few.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, look, always on the lookout for... I mean, my collectability changes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm horror when it comes to, like, comic books. You know, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, the Trinity. And then always looking for variants. Not variants, but variations on that theme. You know, it's like... Just follow the rabbit hole down. It's like between the toys and the other collectibles in those fields and stuff. So I've got an office. It's stacked floor to ceiling with books and DVDs and VHSs and swords and knives and guns and ammo and stacks of comic book boxes. And my wife comes in and she's like, "We need a bigger house." I'm like, she's like, "You don't want to flip any of this? You don't want to sell it?" I'm like, the effort to sell it is worth more than I would make. So, nah. I'll just keep moving it around.
I think that's definitely the one thing we haven't addressed for having a shop like this is that we count on our customers to be fickle. Our typical customer will get into a series of figures, He-Man, Ninja Turtles, Star Wars, and there is a limit. They go by storyline, you know, Power of the Force, the three movies, the trilogies. You're only gonna want those, that kind of thing. And once you hit that limit, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this need, you know, to start a new collection, and people just unload that stuff and start something new. As long as it's 80s, there is a vast, like an ocean of product out there. You will never run out of stuff to collect before you're an old man. If it's 80s, 90s, maybe, you know, that's when you got Power Rangers, stuff like that, Movie Maniacs. Those are very limited. They didn't have very many to pick from. But yeah, that's to touch on that. We have just people that just bring in hundreds of things, and then just, "I'm done with this collection. I'm ready to start anew with something."
So they just turn it back in and try to start over?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah.
See,
can you imagine?
That's crazy. Just all the work and the worry that's involved. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. Some people go fishing for catch and release. I never saw the point. I'm like, if I'm going to sit here and, I mean, I enjoy fishing, but if I'm going to sit here and worry about, like, I'd rather just sit on the dock and drink beer. Why am I going to worry about hooking my finger and getting dirty? And
like, oh, yeah.
I'm going to catch a fish, I'm going to eat a fish. I'm not going to catch fish and just toss it back in the water.
There's just certain things you can run. You can just run out of things to collect. We have a friend who's the biggest Jason Voorhees fan. And he kind of didn't really know that there were toys or that there were collectibles out there. And when he found out, he kind of went a little nuts and just bought everything. And we warned him, we're like, "Slow down, there's not a lot out there. You will hit the limit." You will hit the limit. And sure enough, within a year he had collected pretty much anything that was ever mass-produced for Jason Voorhees.
Wow.
The only thing left for him to collect is maybe extremely expensive masks, you know?
In-person signatures and stuff like
that. Yeah, signatures. Oh, he's got signatures. Yeah, or stuff that was used in, you know, were actual props in the movies and stuff, but he has completely run out in about a year. He's like, what do I do? He doesn't want to stop. But it's like, yeah, there's a limit.
He's selling all of it now.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Voorhees fan myself.
Oh yeah. I have a Jason prototype toy in the next room. He's 3 3/4 inches tall, and they never mass produced it. It's a beautiful piece, fully articulated. His mask actually comes off, and you see the gory face. And it was gonna cost something like $12 to make, and you know that's. The reaction toys sell for $7.99, so there was just no competition to make them. And it's one of those things, you just get lucky and it's like, well, I have one, you know.
Nice.
It's like $90 because they weren't for sale. And that's the kind of stuff my friend would get into. Masks. You pay $400 for a mask, a few hundred dollars for rare action figures signed by the first actor, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Go to horror movie conventions, have all of his stuff signed by Freddy, by Jason, by the actors. But he literally ran out of stuff to buy after about a year. It was nuts.
That's cool. I wish I could do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, always, you know, always have that, like, anytime that lottery gets up behind, you know, like $300 or $400 million, and you're like, what would I do? I'm such a geek. I would just keep doing what I'm doing. I would just go nuclear on it. Like,
oh, yeah.
I wouldn't change much. I would just buy more stuff and put it.
We would just have a bigger store. We've totally talked about that. Just open up a way bigger store and have cooler stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There'd be a Misfit Toys lawn care. There'd be Misfit Toys babysitting service. We would just run with it if we won the lottery. Yeah, we would just stick with it.
Yeah, you got to do something. Yeah. Might as well be happy doing it, right?
Yeah.
Well, it looks like that might be bringing us to the end of our meta episode. Once again, we've been here with Daniel and Paulina from Misfit Toys. If you want to give the data here, where can we find you on the web, and where else? That's your that's your kind of wheelhouse.
Well, on the web, the easiest place to find us is on Facebook. We're Misfit Toys Texas. That's Misfit Toys TX. You can also find us on Instagram, same Misfit Toys TX, and on Twitter. We post pretty regularly on there.
And I will get the direct links and post them in the show notes for this. This is a meta episode. This is going to be landing probably Thursday or Friday, so either the second or the third. Once it's there, it'll have all the links. And so if you can't find them directly, come to us and then link through and you'll be able to find it. So that's pretty much it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.